wonderful system that the elders can use to alert us all at the same time about things that we need to know. I'm very grateful for the system. I just hate it when it's used because it's almost always bad news. And the phone rang, and on my screen it pops up. It says church building, and there's a little picture of the church building, and there's an accept button and a decline button. And I'm just always nervous. I'm always anxious when I'm about to hit the accept button because I don't know what's on the other side of that. It's usually something bad that's happened to somebody, something that was unexpected, something that when everybody got up that morning, nobody knew was coming. Whether the phone is ringing and the all call is going out or not, life is always uncertain. Life tricks us into thinking that it isn't. Life tricks us into thinking that you can count on this afternoon and tomorrow and next week, 95 days out of 100, what you plan comes off more or less without a hitch. No major issues, but we're not guaranteed that. When I was 7 years old, the three members of my family, myself, my mother, and my father, left our apartment, but only two of us would ever return. While we were having, in the place where I preached before I moved here, we were having a church gathering at our house, enjoying having the church together. When my sister-in-law unexpectedly came to our house and pulled my wife aside and told her that her father had been diagnosed with a brain tumor and at best had 2 years left. Totally unexpected. My oldest son was living at home and working at Little Caesars, and it looked like that was going to go on indefinitely. And one day he said, "Hey, would you like to ride with me to the Army recruiter? I'm just going to talk to him and see what's going on." And it wasn't too long after that he was gone for good. Just unexpected. I would imagine that you have your own stories of things that have happened that you did not see coming. You have your own stories of the dreaded diagnosis or the child who goes astray or the spouse who dies, the parent who has terminal health issue. You have your own stories of uncertainty, things that happen in life that you didn't see coming. That's just the nature of life. Proverbs 27:1 says, "Do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring forth." People probably get tired of me constantly using the phrase "Lord willing," but I'll just be honest with you, I'm afraid not to. I'm afraid that anytime that I get the idea that I can say for sure what's going to happen tomorrow, the Lord is going to say, "I need to teach you something about that." So I always want to keep that in mind. You cannot say for sure what you're going to do this afternoon or tonight or what you're going to do tomorrow. I sincerely hope that I get a chance to get home this afternoon and watch a game that I didn't get to watch last night where my team was down by 18 and came back to win in overtime by one. But I don't know that I'll get to do that or not, because all of those things are uncertain. "You do not know," James said, "what your life will be like tomorrow. You are just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away." Notice that James says two things there. He says, first of all, you don't know what your life will be like tomorrow. Perhaps you have two functioning legs today. You may not have that tomorrow. Perhaps you have a fully functioning heart today. You may not have that tomorrow. Perhaps you are secure in your finances. You may not be that way tomorrow. But not only do you not know what your life will be like, James says you don't know that your life will be. You don't even know that you'll be here. I almost did it right there. I almost said we're going to come back together tonight. We plan to come back together tonight. And we would love for everyone here to be back here again at 6 o'clock so that we can sing together. The fact is, though, you may not even be around to be able to make it. I may not be here. to make it. Life tricks us, you know, and we make our plans. Our family, before too long, is going to watch It's a Wonderful Life. If you've never seen that, you need to. If you haven't seen it, I'm about to spoil something for you, but you should have seen it by now. It came out in the 40s. I mean, there's no excuse. And it's like a classic. You can't even be an American citizen without watching It's a Wonderful Life, so get on it. But in the movie, there's a young man named George, and George has big plans. He lives in a little town called Bedford Falls, and there's just nothing there, and he hates it. And he wants to get out badly. And so he's sort of falling for a girl. Her name is Mary. And they're wishing on the moon or something one night. And she says, "What'd you wish, George?" He says, "Well, not just one wish, a whole hatful, Mary. I know what I'm going to do tomorrow and the next day and the next year and the year after that. I'm shaking the dust of this crummy little town off my feet, and I'm going to see the world. Italy, Greece, the Parthenon, the Colosseum. Then I'm coming back here and go to college and see what they know. And then I'm going to build things. I'm going to build airfields. I'm going to build skyscrapers 100 stories high. I'm going to build bridges a mile long." He said, "I know what I'm going to do tomorrow and next week and next year and the year after that." But you know, if you've seen the movie, George never leaves Bedford Falls. He never does any of those things. He didn't really know what he was going to do, even though he thought he did. Life is uncertain. There's so many things about life that are uncertain. Basic needs, uncertain. We worry, don't we, about having enough money? Am I making enough? Will I continue to make enough? Will I put away enough? Do I have enough to retire? Will my retirement live long enough for me, or will I outrun the money? Will I be able to feed my family? We worry about relationships. What is going to happen to the people that I love? What will happen to the people in my family? Will they be faithful? Will they be Christians? Will they get sick? Will they leave? Will those that I love continue to love me? We worry about relationships. We worry that we're not fulfilling our purpose. We worry that maybe I ought to be doing something else and I don't ever really know. We worry about our health. In my family, it's heart disease. That's what takes people out. In my family, it's heart, almost to a person, it's heart disease. You know, so you worry about that. What is it in your family that typically is terminal for people? In my family, it's heart disease. And so for my entire life, all I've ever known is worrying about heart attacks. That's all I've ever known. What is it for you? What do you worry about with your health? What do you worry about in your old age? Will I be able to take care of myself? Will I decline? Will I be bedridden? Will anybody take care of me? Can I afford to get sick? We worry about the condition of the world, and Lord knows we should. It's just getting worse all the time. Will we continue to have the way of life that we have? Will the world get more violent, more unstable? We worry about spiritual things. What will happen to me spiritually in my relationship with God? So there's just so many things that are uncertain in life. How do we handle that? Well, you know, different people have different ways of handling it. Some people become control freaks. Some people say, "I'm going to plan, I'm going to calendar, I'm going to write it down. I know exactly, like George, I know exactly, and I'm controlling it, and I'm going to make this, my life happen this way." And as an old Yiddish proverb restated by Woody Allen said, "If you want to make God laugh, tell Him your plans." You can't control anything, really. Some people depend on others. I'll let others help me. I'll depend on other people. Well, there's only so much they can do at the end of the day. Some people just deny it, avoid it, procrastinate, act like it isn't there, bury your head in the sand, don't deal with uncertainty. Some people depend on themselves. "I've got this. I can handle this. No matter what comes, I can handle it." And the truth is that you can't. Some people escape. Some people drugs. Some people alcohol. Some people sex. Some people money. Some people work. or whatever it might be, and that's how they deal with it. Well, none of that stuff works. Thankfully, Jesus, turn to Matthew chapter 6, Jesus addressed it. Jesus in Matthew chapter 6 addresses this issue of the uncertainty of life. Jesus deals with the things that we worry about. In Matthew 6, he talks about moth and rust destroy and thieves break in and steal. Our financial situation is always uncertain, even if it feels like it isn't. We worry about how long we're going to live. Jesus said, you worry about adding a year to your life. You worry about how long you're going to live. My dad died at 44. 44 was a tough year for me. Now, I know that that's silly. Why would anybody think that because their dad died at 44, that's going to be, well, that's just the way, it's just people are irrational. And that's what I worried about the entire year. And we worry about that. Maybe your parents died young or your grandparents and you worry, what if I don't live very long? You worry about what am I going to eat? What am I going to drink? What am I going to wear? You worry about what's going to happen tomorrow. You might have something on your mind right now that you're worried about, something that you have to face tomorrow and you don't know how it's going to go and you're concerned about that. This is what Jesus is dealing with in this passage. And so here's what Jesus says, three things. Number one, don't. Something. Number two, but, so don't do what I'll tell you. And then, but you need to do this. And then when you do that, you can do this. So that's it. Take out your songbook. No, that's not it. Hang on. We're not done yet. So don't do this, but do this. Then you can do that. That's what Jesus is going to tell us. So the first thing he says, Matthew chapter 6 and verse 19, don't make this world your focus. Matthew 6, 19. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and thieves do not break in or steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. The eye of the lamp is the body. So then if your eye is clear, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light that is in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters, for he will either hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. For this reason, I say to you, do not be worried about your life as to what you will eat or drink, nor for your body as to what you will put on. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing? Here's what Jesus says. Number one, and when we're reading this, you might have said to yourself, what in the world? We're going to get there. So this is the first thing he says that I want us to notice, verse 23. If your eye is bad, your whole body is full of darkness. How many senses do we have? How many senses do we have? Physical senses, how many? Got five, right? Unless you're Bruce Willis and you got six. But we're not Bruce Willis. We only got five. So you got five senses, right? What are they? Sight, touch, taste, smell, hearing. What? Yeah, hearing. That's right. So those are our five senses. Do you know which of those senses, if you lose it, is the most damaging to quality of life? This is actually quantifiable. Do you know which of the five senses, sight, hearing, smell, touch, or taste, is most damaging to quality of life? Now, you probably, if you're paying attention, probably pretty obvious. But the answer is, as damaging as hearing loss can be, losing sight is the most damaging to quality of life. Losing your sight puts you in the most likely to suffer depression, the most likely to be injured, the most likely to make less money, less likely to be happy, and a million other things. When you lose your sight, the quality of life potentially is greatly diminished. That's true in the physical world. Jesus said it's also true in the spiritual world. When he says in verse 23, your eye, he's talking about your focus, what you are focused on, what your life is about. what you're living for. When you get up in the morning, what you're thinking about. When you're driving down the road and you're zoning out, what are you thinking about? When you lay down in bed at night and you're trying to drift off to sleep, what are you thinking about? That's what Jesus calls your eye. That's what he's talking about. What your focus in life is. And Jesus says, if your focus is on the right thing, everything is light. But if your focus is on the wrong thing, everything is what? It's darkness. He's saying that if your life focus is wrong, your whole life is wrong. Everything is bad. You don't want to make this world your focus, because where your treasure is, that's where your heart's going to be. It's an interesting statement. What does it mean? When I was 20 years old, I got my first car. I had a job that I could afford to buy a car. It was a gold, two-door Honda Civic hatchback. No heat or air. It was about as basic a car can be. But I loved it. It was my first car. And I loved that car. And I had not had that car very long when I was driving through a parking lot and a young girl backed out of her space and rammed my car and crumpled the front quarter panel. Her name was Tracy. No, it wasn't. It was not Tracy. But she damaged my car, and I was devastated. I was devastated. If you ever had a car that you love, you know what that's like. I was devastated because my mind wasn't totaled. I could still drive it. It was fine. But she had damaged my car that I loved, and I felt so bad about that, and I was so frustrated by that, I made a decision. I will never put that much affection on a vehicle again. I'm not going to do it. It's too easy for it to get damaged or break down, and then I'm frustrated, angry. So I'm not going to do it anymore, and I haven't done it. Now, that sometimes it got a little extreme. Sometimes that led to me driving around Morehead City in a rust bucket of a car that the whole church was embarrassed by. But nevertheless, I've overcome that too. A little bit of balance to it now. But I just decided that I was not going to get that attached to a physical item again. Because if you put your attention and focus on it and something happens, and I've got to be careful about this, I still struggle with this. When I started dating Tracy, she had an entertainment center that had a hole for a TV that was this big, but she had a TV that was that big. And it was in November. And bowl season was about to start. College football bowl season was about to start. And I said to her, is there any way you can upgrade that TV? Can you get a bigger TV? Shockingly, she did. We'd only been dating for about a month. I still can't believe it. But she knew a good thing when she saw it. Nevertheless, so we went out. And so I got a bigger TV. And pretty much my life since that moment has been a quest for bigger and bigger TVs. And now I've got the biggest TV I've ever had. And I absolutely love my TV. It's humongous. And I love it. But I worry. You see, it gets to me. I think about, what if something happens? What if we have another fire? What if somebody breaks in and takes my TV? What if somebody trips and falls into the TV? And I get all worried about it. That's all reminded. Wait a minute. You can't be that attached, because where your treasure is, that's where your heart's going to be. And if your heart's in it, then you can get upset about it. So Jesus says, don't do that. Because he says life is more than food and clothing. The most important things in life are not the physical things. So he says, don't make this world your focus. Instead, he says, put first things first. Notice verse 33. Jesus says in Matthew 6:33, but seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. So do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will take care of itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. Boy, isn't that the truth? And so Jesus tells us, don't worry. And the only way to avoid worry is to do what he says in verse 33. Look at it again. But seek what? Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness. Seek first his kingdom and being right with him and doing the right thing. That needs to be the first thing on your mind. Now, how do I know what's first in my life? Because this is very abstract. How do I know what's first in my life? It's not like a race, where if somebody runs a race, the guy that comes in first, or gal, that comes in first, you can see that. They're first. But when it comes to what's first in your life, how can you know what you're putting first? Well, the first thing I would suggest would be the time that you spend. Now, this is not simply a matter of logging hours, right? So, for instance, many of you spend a very significant chunk of your day at a job, right? So, if we're going strictly by time, somebody might say, well, obviously, your work is the most important thing to you. Well, that's not why you're going to work. You're not going to work because you want to go to work necessarily, but because why? Because God has said what? Support your family. That's how you do it. So it's not simply a matter of logging hours and then I'm not saying that. What I'm saying, though, is that where you spend your time is going to give you a very good indication where you spend your money. Right? If you just give me access to your bank statement and your calendar, everybody's like, dude, no way in the world. No way I'm giving you that. That's fine. But if you can give me access to your bank statement and your calendar, I could tell you what's number one. That's how we know. Right, what's a priority? What is a priority to you? If two things come up at the same time, which one do you choose? The priority is what you're putting first. I mean, that's just a practical way to see that for the most part. Not always, but generally speaking. What do you talk about? What do you talk about? What is it that you have when you're sitting around chatting, what is it that you're talking about? It's a good indication of what's first. Where do you give your attention? What are your thoughts and what plans are you making? Well, how can I make sure that I'm putting God first? Well, that's the answer. I've got to make sure that I'm giving God a priority of my time. I've got to be sure that I'm giving God a priority of my money. And I'm not just talking about the contribution. If I could change one thing about the church, it might well be that every time we talk about money, we talk about the contribution. Now, I'm not going to tell you that's not important. Goodness knows, keep giving. And if you can do better, do better. Right? I'm not saying that. But it's much more than that. Do you give to those in need? Do you purchase Bible study materials? Do you purchase Bible resources? Do you spend money helping other Christians? Where does your money go? What are your priorities? What do you talk about? Where does your attention go? So put God first. And then Jesus says, if you'll do that, all these things will be added to you. What does he mean by that? He means if you'll put God first, you'll never need to worry about anything because he's going to make sure you have what you need. And then finally, don't make this world your focus. Put first things first, then what? Well, then trust God to handle it. If you will not make this world your focus, and if you will put God first, then you can trust God to handle it. Look at what Jesus says in Matthew 6 and verse 26. Look at the birds of the air, that they do not sow nor reap nor gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not worth much more than they? And who of you by being worried can add a single hour to his life? Why are you worried about clothing? Observe how the lilies of the field grow. They do not toil, nor do they spin. Yet I say to you that not even Solomon in all his glory clothed himself like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which is alive today and tomorrow is thrown into the furnace, will he not much more clothe you, you of little faith? Do not worry then, saying, what will we eat, What will we drink, or what will we wear for clothing? How can you trust God? Look at the evidence. Look at the evidence. The Bible says, look around and reflect on nature. See how God provides for what He has created. You are the pinnacle. You are the top. You are the head cheese of the universe. You're the most important thing in the universe. And if God makes sure that birds have something to eat, He's going to make sure that your needs are taken care of. Read the Bible. Study the Scriptures. Read the instances of God taking care of His people. And remember your own past. I would imagine that you, like me, have had events in the past about which you said, there's no way I'm making it through that. Things have come up that were so difficult, so disturbing, so sad, so challenging, that you thought to yourself, this is too much. I cannot bear it. And yet, here you are. Here you are. Remember God's faithfulness in your own past. Look at the evidence. Believe in God. Believe the things that you have seen that God has done for others and for you, and then obey the command of Jesus not to worry. Well, next week, Lord willing, so in this series of sermons, we're answering life's big questions. Next week, what do I do about my sin? This is really the big one because we all have this problem. What do we do about our sin? We're going to make a study of 1 Corinthians and see how Paul answers that question in the book of 1 Corinthians. For now, let's remember Matthew 6. Take out your song book and turn the invitation. Was it 480? Is that right? Number 480. Number 480. We'll sing that song in just a minute. Remember what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 6? Don't, but then. Don't make this world your focus. Put first things first. Then you will be able to trust God to handle the uncertainty that you face. It's a great song that we're about to sing, Victory in Jesus. It's about victory over sin, about victory over Satan. But it's also about victory in life. All of us face uncertainty and worry and challenge and difficulty. I would be surprised if most of us who are here today did not have something specific that you have on your mind that you're worried about what's going to happen. I would be surprised if the majority of us are not thinking about something specific. I don't know what's going to happen here. I'm worried that it's not going to go right, and I'm concerned about the consequences of what's going to happen. Well, salvation gives us victory not only over sin and Satan, but over worry and uncertainty. So if you're not a Christian, we'd love to talk to you about what you need to do to become one. Becoming a Christian enables you to live your best life here and have eternal life forever. If you are a Christian, one of the tools that God has given to help you deal with uncertainty is the church. And we would love to help you. If there's something that's bothering you, you don't know what to do about it, we want to help. We'd love to talk to you privately after church, or you can come forward and take a seat on the front as we stand and sing.